I like being able to hold it in my hands and just admire these different characteristics. When you're looking at it through the scope, like, it doesn't even matter.
I know guys that have been going out here for like 4 or 5 years in a row on the rifle hunt and not getting one. They got shitty eyesight, and if you're not downwind from them, they're not going to run. That's their Achilles heel, is their eyesight. And they can't lift their head up that high, so if you're above them, that's the other thing. Hunters hunted for meat forever, and that carried on. So when you shot a big-bodied animal, that carried on. It's the whole experience. And every time I talk to new bow hunters, I always tell them, like, if you're in this for the kill, you're going to come home disappointed more times than not. You got to be in it for everything. The birds, the bees, the wind, the freaking, you know, everything.
Hey guys, before we get into this next episode, I want to share a couple things with you. First, I am happy to announce the new daysinthewild.com is finally launched. Everything is in one place, my guide services, the podcasts, access to my blogs, etc. So go check it out, daysinthewild.com. If you've been following the show lately, you know that we've partnered with Bushnell and Primos. The awesome thing about that is that if you use promo code STL02, you will save 15% on anything they sell. Doesn't have to be the stuff that I use. I've been using the Bushnell trail cameras for years. I did a couple of reviews over the years, and Bushnell always came out on top. They're excellent. And I know you've heard me talk about Primos calls and how good they are, but I've also been using their ground blinds, and they're awesome. I don't know if you know, remember double bull blinds, but that's a Primos product now, or has been for a while. I also tried out a set of their shooting sticks, and for standing shots or using for clients when we're predator hunting, or my kids that need it when we're spot and stalk and have to get in close on javelina or anything like that. It's like a really good tool. I love them. They're quick setup and they're steady. Lastly, do yourself a favor and go check out the lineup of shooting bags, glassing pads, and other accessories that Phoenix Shooting Bags puts out. Go to phoenixshootingbags.com, use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and save 20%. Rifle season is upon us, guys. You'll thank me later, I promise. Go check them out. Hey, don't forget to give us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It helps me keep bringing you guys content for free, and it definitely helps out our ratings and reach more people. So thanks again for taking care of that. Appreciate it. Now let's roll into this next episode.
If you haven't guessed it, I got Marlon on today, aka Great Light Hunter. We're going to talk a little bit about scoring mule deer on the hoof. Me personally, I know Marlon kind of shares this with me too a little bit, but I'm like one of those guys, if I see something that I like, I don't give a shit what the ancients are, I'm going to go for it. But then again, I haven't shot a lot of big deer, so I got a bunch of medium deer. And that's probably because I got an itchy trigger finger, but anyhow, it's important to know, I think it's an important skill to have to be able to do it. And mule deer have a certain, mule deer always look bigger than they really are, in my opinion. Like, I feel like if anybody's going to, you're not going to underscore a muley. I don't know. Do you feel that way?
I think it's a little of both. Like, first off, I don't even know what a big deer is yet either. So I'm like right there with you. I'm trying to figure that out. And I'm like working super hard to try and, I think I'm definitely getting better at giving it a few more days. Let's put it that way. Like in the high country this year, I freaking gave it 9 days of looking for a particular buck and not seeing him. Not some of those days were, you know, right preseason scouting days trying to turn him up. And but then, you know, there was like a week in the field trying to hunt him and like didn't find him, and then sheep came through and other hunters and hikers before I'm like, all right, I gotta get home. I have responsibilities. It's time to like drop the hammer on something. And literally the last morning I just went in and arrowed something, so I came out. So like I get what you're saying. 200 is so elusive for me, it's almost like the impossible number. And I don't even like to think about it anymore. I'm overthinking about it. I almost don't care about arbitrary numbers. I care about the quality of the hunt, the quality of the people that I'm with, enjoying myself. And really, like what you just said, it hits the nail on the head and resonates so much more than any score ever could. Like, I don't look at any of those deer that I've arrowed and say, oh, well, that one scores this and that one scores that. And I look at them because they're so cool. Oh, look at his palmation over here. Look how big his fronts are. Wow, that's so neat. Like, I love that he has 4-inch eye guards, but the inches don't really matter. It's really just a way of explaining it to somebody that's maybe not in front of you. I like being able to hold it in my hands and just admire these different characteristics. And in my head, when I'm admiring the characteristics, I'm never thinking how many inches this is or how many inches that is. I'm like, oh, that's a killer cheater. Oh, I like, right. You know, the extra or the palmation or the mass or just the way it feels, or he's heavy. You know, like when you get a big mountain deer in your hands, the antlers are much denser bone matter wise. They're just much denser antlers, and the rack is a lot heavier as a result of that. At desert bucks, the antlers are pretty light. They're not as bone dense as mountain deer, and so you'll get a big mountain buck in your hands. And like a couple of years ago, I have like a low 180s 4-point that I got up in Wyoming, and I just put him in my hands, and his antlers are just really dense, and you can feel the weight in your hands. That if I put an equally scoring buck in my other hand from the desert, it's maybe like 3/4 of the weight, equal okay. scoring, but the weight is at least 20, maybe even 30% less.
Right.
So it's really interesting because the mass measurements and all that, you know, indicate that they're very similar, but super different. So, you know, there's just different things about them that are so great. And when you're looking at it through the scope, like it doesn't even matter. You're just like, oh my gosh, I see a cheater. I'm in.
Yeah.
That part about it to me is really more important. Like, if I see a buck that's a couple inches past his ears with huge forks and like maybe a little bit of character somehow, like split eye guards or, you know, a little cheater, I mean, I'm in. I'm just sold. You don't even have to ask me any further. I go for it. But I definitely know for sure that the tiny basket racks, like those days are over. Like I can't do that anymore. I definitely... Yeah. I'm going to hold out and wait. And, you know, if it just doesn't happen, then I'd rather eat my tag than arrow another like small buck. You know, I can't do that anymore. I love mature animals, but yeah. I'm there now too,
finally. It took me like 30 some odd years of bow hunting, but I finally got to a point where I can't. It's an age thing. Like if they're super young, I can't do it. Like I can't shoot a young deer anymore. I just shot a whitetail in Florida. And the deer that I was hunting in the area I was hunting, they're very comparable to coos deer, like size-wise, body size, antler size. A really big buck there is like 120-inch, 120-inch buck. Like, that's a fucking stud. So I shot like an 85-incher. But he was an old... right? You'd see it, and you wouldn't even think twice about it. But an 85-inch coos deer is a good coos deer for archery.
Yeah.
Pope and Young, 67 inches, to give you an idea. So, I don't know, he might be bigger than 85, but that's what I'm saying. Like, but he's an old deer. The guy who, when I brought him to the butcher, he's like, oh, this deer's like 5 years old. I'm like, this 5-year-old deer? Like, I knew he was older because he had a big body. His freaking neck was all swollen. They're starting to rut over. They were starting to rut in September or beginning of October, which is cool. There's three different ruts depending on where you are in Florida.
Yeah.
Some of them rut in March. Some of them rut in August. It's the weirdest thing.
Well, these coastal hybrids... These mm-hmm. little blacktail hybrids in California, they start rutting like end of July in full rut on the coast. And then most of it's first part of August, and then inland just a little bit. It's like mid-October. They get crazy. So same kind of deal. They rut all different. You could literally chase the rut with a bow from the first part of August all the way through the end of January and chase rutting deer if you made it a point to do that.
Yeah. I actually mapped out years ago I was going to hunt from August straight through the March. This is when I was a single man and I could do this. And I end up putting it together. But you can hunt rutting deer from August all the way to March in this country. You know, you'd have to switch back and forth between muleys and whitetail and stuff. But you can hunt deer with a bow the whole time. Like, literally just go straight through.
Isn't that great?
I was going to do it, man. I had like 2 weeks per month. No, I didn't do it. Work kind of screwed me up. I couldn't work it out with my cousin, who was my partner at the time. And it was just too much shit going on. That's a long time, man. That's like I would have gotten like 2 weeks out of every month for six months, you know, or whatever it was, 7 months. Yeah, I know.
That sounds perfect.
So, yeah.
That like there was no such thing as a straight off season. Like, don't you wish that end of January hit and you weren't totally screwed till, you know, August?
If you gotta go to the country, you gotta go to like Argentina, you gotta go to South America and hunt because their fall is our summer, you know.
They need to transplant mule deer there.
Yeah, for you they'd have to do that. But they have, you know, whitetail, they have red stag, they have all that wapiti, they have all
that crap. crap that just doesn't matter. Irrelevant stuff.
Irrelevant stuff. Yeah.
Doesn't matter. It's like, you can take.
Oh, God. I pity you for not fucking like loving it at all, man.
That full cancel button. Like, none of that shit matters. If you have any of that, it's cancel. It doesn't matter.
Oh, my God, man. I love that you're so passionate about one animal, but I think that would drive you fucking insane. That would drive
you insane. I'm, like, seeing people out hunting heavily, and I'm like, you poor souls. Like, that's really fun.
It is. It's super fun.
It would be fun to watch, like, a 10-year-old shoot one. It's like, super when my fun. Son.
Yeah. You gonna take him javelina hunting?
I'll take him.
Yeah.
But, man, when I see people get javelina tags, I'm stoked for them. Super stoked for them. I got to be stoked for everybody, for whatever they choose to do. I think it's amazing. It's awesome. It gets people outdoors, and that's the super important part. But just, I just like, oh, they're so dumb, and they just stand there and look at you at like 10 yards and piss on themselves, and then they walk off into the bushes 10 yards further and stare at you again. You're like, God, you're so stupid. How did you get this far? I don't know. How did they make it? They're so dumb.
You know, man, I think a lot of people, they're definitely, once you find them, I think they're very easy to kill. But I think a lot of people have a hard time finding them. You don't, because you spend, like you said, you just spent 2 weeks looking for mule deer. You spent 2 weeks looking for mule deer, you're going to see a bunch of fucking javelina. That's just, you know, part of it. But, like, I know guys that have been going out here for, like, 4 or 5 years in a row on the rifle hunt and not getting one. It's actually my most popular hunt. I sell more javelina hunts than I do anything. People from all over the freaking country come home with me for javelina.
I think that's great.
A lot of people, and they come with the idea too, like, because they go see these javelina hunts in Texas. You know, and Texas is like, you can hit a trash can like that, make it sound like corn coming out or something, then it can fucking run it out. You know.
Well, let me back up just a second. Let me not, like, since this is a public forum, I mean, I'm not knocking it. I just spent enough time around them to where I think they're stupid. That's all. I just don't think they're very smart. And for me, it's not. There's no challenge.
They got shitty eyesight. And if you're not downwind from them, they're not going to run. I shouldn't say that. They're going to run. If you make too much noise, if whatever, if they make too much movement. But if you're smart about it, if you use the wind, that's their first defense. I mean, because their eyesight really sucks. They have only pick up movement. They're not. If you're standing like a statue in some trees, they can't see you. They can't make you out.
They're so funny.
That's their Achilles heel, is their eyesight. And they can't lift their head up that high, so if you're above them, that's the other thing. So, like, if you're on top of a ridge and they're down below you, they can't lift their head up to see you.
They're all...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They're such funny little creatures, and I think they're cool. They're really neat desert animals. Anyway. Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. But,
I digress.
So let's talk about scoring some mule deer. What are some
tips? How did you get me on the topic of javelina?
What's your problem? You drew the line to javelina. I started talking about red stags and sheep and freaking other deer and... You went to javelina.
All that irrelevant stuff.
I think you want to shoot a javelina now. That's why. You want to be part of the clan.
Maybe so. Scoring mule deer. That's interesting because I'm going to make a disclaimer right out front that I'm generally about 5 to 7 inches off almost on every buck I kill.
Okay. Reasonable.
Generally, when I make that assessment, it's usually they're generally bigger than what I say. I have a tendency to underjudge them in the field when I'm in the scope. I have a tendency to, like, be pretty realistic. And I think it really, a lot of people talk about rack bracketing. A lot of people talk about 60% of the score being made up on the front side, not the back end. But really, it comes down to, like, spending just a ton of time with mule deer. And then, and I feel like it comes down to spending a ton of time understanding them in their ecosystem. You can't spend a lot of time in the Rocky Mountains, in big, big mountain country with mountain deer, and then come down to the desert and expect your strategy to work. You're really going to be disappointed, because out in the desert, the buck's bodies tend to be a lot smaller and the ears tend to be a lot bigger than their bodies proportionate wise. Whereas in the mountains, mountain deer tend to be so much bigger body wise. And I mean, I've seen mule deer in the mountain. Like, so my Wyoming muley from year before last was probably every bit of, I digress again. You ever run across your hunting friends that say, oh, well, how much did it weigh? You're like, I don't know. I don't care. What do you mean? How much did it weigh? I don't know.
That was a, listen, I'm going to even say like 19, I'm going to say 1995. Pre-1995, when somebody told you they shot a deer, they told you they shot a 10-pointer, they told you they shot a 5-pointer, a 6-pointer, whatever, and he weighed this much. That was, people did not score shit. When I was a kid, especially whitetail country, nobody fucking scored over there on the East Coast. I shot a 300-pound buck. I shot a, you know, 260-pound doe. People were excited about that.
Okay,
because so it stemmed from when, like, hunters hunted for meat forever, and that carried on. So when you shot a big-bodied animal, that carried on all the way through the 80s and early 90s.
Hunting encyclopedia. So what do you have to say when somebody says, how many did you catch? Did you catch any?
that's a different thing. my mom still says that to me all the time. Did you catch
anything? Mm-hmm.
Yep. By his little toe.
Yeah,
let it go.
Okay, so what I was getting at with that was I did pay attention to his body. His body was huge. This Wyoming buck had a body that was over 250, maybe 270, like just huge, fat mountain deer. And his ears were 27 inches. When I was looking at him from the little phone cam thing, watching him feed, he looked like he had goalposts. They were just way out there on each side. I'm like, wow, this thing's got a massive frame. He's just freaking wider and crap. But then I'd look at his ears, and his ears would go right out. I'm like, maybe he's not as big as I think he is. Like,
right.
So there was a lot of back and forth going on in my head. But then I'm like, okay, I saw, you know, a two-year-old deer, a small three-point, and like a 150, 155-inch four-point next to him. And I'm like, wow, those bodies are really tiny. So he's super mature, deep brisket. You know, not much of a sway back, but this deer was like definitely like a five-and-a-half-year-old animal at least. And you could just see kind of like that maturity coming in on him. And so I'm like, okay, he's a 30-inch buck, and he's just hiding it. Does mountain deer have a tendency to hide it? Whereas if you see a 180-inch deer in the desert, sometimes you can overjudge them. You can sit there and go, ooh, he's, you know, that deer might be 190. So I think that that's really kind of like, you know, what comes into place more is knowing where you hunt, knowing the animals where you hunt, understanding how big the bodies are and their ears comparative to like their rat characteristics. And that's really going to help you out a ton. Knowing those things about those animals before you go into a hunt and breaking it down by region is going to be a huge help. Knowing that desert deer just really at the end of the day, I've seen big desert bucks, don't get me wrong, but you don't often see a 300-pound desert mule deer. It just
doesn't happen.
It's not a thing. I mean, most desert mule deer, I'm going to say, are going to be right around 170 to 200, 210, like in that wheelhouse. They're not a ton heavier than that, unless you start getting up into the junipers. When you start getting up into the cedars and the pines and the junipers, then you start seeing some 220, 250 type stuff. But desert mule deer, like in the Creosote, in the saguaro cactuses, in the ironwoods, Palo Verdes, those deer are 170 to 200 max. Generally, and there, I know there are exceptions to that, but I think that has a big, you know, that for me anyhow, that plays a big role in what that deer is ultimately going to end up scoring. So I take that into consideration and know that a desert mule deer's ears are generally around, I'd say 22 to 24 inches. In my experience, about 22 to 24 inches. And a mature Rocky Mountain mule deer is going to be, you know, 26, 27. And we're just talking mature, you know, mature animals. The younger animals will be a little bit different.
But just like us,
our noses and our ears never stop growing.
Okay. So the older they are, that's right. And I want to add to that, because we're talking about mountain deer and we're talking about desert deer, but there's also prairie mule deer. That they tend to be, for me, they're the hardest to judge. We had this conversation about that buck right there that's behind me. He doesn't, I mean, you look at him, you can't really, when you saw the picture when I killed him, you're like, why are you shooting in such a, you know, young deer? Or not young deer, but it's such a smaller deer. I mean, he doesn't score great because he's a 2x4, but
I'm looking at him right now and he looks 157.
Yeah, I was going to say he's a 150-inch deer. But if you look at it, it's 150-inch deer as a 2x4. You know, the prairie bucks, my buck last year was 328 pounds, I think they told me it was.
What?
328. Fucking hammer. If you see him next to Charles's deer, Charles shot like a four-year-old deer. My buck was 6 years old. They look night and day. My buck is like a tank, and his is like the torpedo that came out of the tank. It's like, his was a big buck, and his was a big body buck. His buck scored like right around 140, but I was actually trying to look for a picture of them both hanging next to each other, but they're not good pictures.
Yeah, so that's a big body. Huge body.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a shitty picture, and you're not gonna be able to see it. And of course, everybody that's listening to this is not gonna be able to see that. But
he's gonna start busting out his cell phone.
Well, I wanted to show it to you. So they have been, and on the prairie, because it's all wide open, they rely on their ears a lot. Their ears are freaking giant. I think they're an inch longer. I measured it a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to measure it now because now I already forgot the freaking inches. But they're inch. I want to say his ears are about an inch longer than my Arizona buck, my biggest Arizona buck.
So
if they're an inch, it's like they got big ears, but they also got these big bodies. My guy's neck was so big, like his head, like his rack didn't look that until I really like got him. I mean, when I got him on the floor, I mean, he took great pictures, so he looks really big in the pictures. But that's why I have such a hard time. I feel like they always look bigger than what they really are. When I first caught a glimpse of him, I thought, shit, man, this deer's, he's a freaking slob. And then, of course, I saw that it's my third 2x4 that I've killed there. Something about the genetics in that area.
Just weed those genetics out for me, so that way, by the time I get there, we don't have any of that.
I am, actually. That's why I keep shooting them. I keep shooting the 2x4. Like, I realized it was a 2x4, obviously, before I shot it. And I was like, oh, it's another 2x4. I'm going to go kill that buck. He's a big, freaking mature buck, and he was breeding every goddamn doe down there, so that he passes genetics anyway. But, sorry, go back to what you were saying. Their nose keeps on growing, and their ears keep on growing.
I mean, anymore, I really think that you got to just shoot what makes you happy. I think that, you know, score is a fun way to kind of, like, give somebody an idea of proportions.
Right.
Because sometimes a photo doesn't do justice. And you know, we all kind of want to know, like, hey, what is it? You know, what's he got? And that's mm-hmm. really something that is part of the journey.
Mm-hmm.
But in person, like, as soon as I look through the scope, you know, I know whether I'm excited or not. Almost immediately, right, right. You know? You just get that, you get that impression, like, right off the bat. Oh, man, I want to arrow that one, you know? There's no thought that goes into it at all other than it's an instant reaction.
Yep.
Very, very basic primal kind of function. Oh, I'm excited, or not excited. And it's interesting that I think that level of excitement definitely surpasses score, but almost gets more difficult than score because the character at that point has to be something so standout that it really is rare.
Right.
Like, if it has exceptional mass, or, you know, I mean, let's face it, how difficult is it to find a non-typical, which, you know, cheaters, palmation, mass. I mean, that's like a rare animal.
Yeah.
A really rare animal. So it's like, if I had the opportunity to shoot 180-inch non-typical or 180-inch typical, like, the typical is just going to get passed. 190-inch typical would get passed to 180-inch non-typical for me.
Really? Okay, cool. That's
awesome. Like, I have so many typicals that I love character. I love looking. When I look at a bunch of, like, you go to Cabela's, which ones do you look at?
Ones with all the freaking all shit everywhere.
Yeah, I love, and I almost feel like, I don't know, I haven't had the privilege of really being around, you know, animals like that in my time in the mountains. I spent a lot of time in the mountains, and you know, maybe it's just that I don't hunt private ground, or I don't have access to, like, you know, the right country.
Mm-hmm.
But I just haven't had the privilege of being around that type of animal. So I don't even know that it exists in my world. You know what I mean? Like, when people kill a 220, that's so far from reality for me. That doesn't even compute, right? I'm not that guy.
Right.
You know, if I see a 180 on public ground and in a place I can hunt, like, I get pretty excited. So, and usually that's like a 27 to 30 inch deer. It's got, you know, just a great frame and great forks all the way around with eye guards. You know what I mean? That's really that kind of buck. And for a buck to get to that level of growth on any of our public land areas is kind of a feat anymore.
Right.
So I kind of set my bar there. That's kind of like what I go into a hunt kind of looking for. And, you know, if I see something better, cool. If I don't, and if I see something smaller, then I'll just hunt the best buck that I see.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I hope one day, you know, I'll be able to get something that's just crazy.
Extraordinary. Yeah.
Yeah. Extraordinary. But I guess I don't really know that. I don't know. I feel like, if I go into a hunt that way, I'm only just going to be disappointed. So
what we were talking about earlier, man. It's like, you just gotta, I mean, I've swayed back and forth on the spectrum so many times that, I know, when you take hunter safety, they tell you about the five phases of whatever, you know, the trophy phase, the limiting out, whatever. I've slid back and forth on that scale, I don't know how many times, but the one thing that I always felt, and I know you share this, it's like, it's about being out there and experiencing everything. Like, that's why I'm a destination hunter. That's why I like hunting new things, and I like hunting different species because it's always a new thing for me. Like, I don't care. Like, I mean, I shouldn't say I don't care. I care. I care about the animals that I like, the type of animal that I want to kill. But I don't even know how to put it into words right now. But it's about everything. It's about the culmination of all the whole experience, you know? It's the freezing your ass off. It's the getting rained on. It's the being out there relying on yourself. It's the being with friends. Like, I love hunting with freaking other people. Like, don't get me wrong. I enjoy hunting by myself because there's times that, like, you just need that solitude. But it's the whole experience. And every time I talk to new bow hunters, I always tell them, like, if you're in this for the kill, you're going to come home disappointed more times than not. You got to be in it for everything. The birds, the bees, the wind, the freaking, you know, everything. And that translates over into the type of trophy that you want. Like, you want, when I'm out there, I'm hunting for the experience and hunting for the memory as well as the rack. You know what I'm saying? Like, does that make sense? Yeah. It's hard for me to put it in words. I actually tried to write something about it years ago and I didn't come out right.
I think I find that I know for a fact that I don't. And, you know, maybe a lot of people that have killed a bunch of 200s would just say that because, oh, he only feels that way because he's never killed one.
That might be it. That might be it. Like, I don't know. You know,
but I never look at them and go, oh, this one's a 180, that one's a 165, that one's a 174, that one's a 189. I go, that one was cool, that one was really rad. Like, but there's definitely like a standard there, meaning like, I guarantee you, I'm picky as heck when I get on the mountain. I'm super picky. I'll pass up deer left and right, but it's just because it like didn't
your motor ride
click. Yeah, it didn't get me going. So how do I pick apart a deer though, as far as,
yeah, let's try to give them some kind of system to use so they can score themselves. We've given our philosophy quite a bit. Let's see if we can give
it. Generally speaking, like, if you mess with enough deer ears, I kind of have a tendency based on where I'm hunting, I'll give a number for an ear. Like, I'll say, you know, the ear's 9 inches, the ear's 8 inches, right? And I'll use that as kind of a marker, a milestone. I'll look at the base of the ear, right where it attaches to the head. And, you know, generally on a deer, you're like 6-7 inches around. There are 7 inches around. And so, like, if a deer's got, you know, really big mass, like the base of his ear is going to be, the burr is going to become small. Or if he's willow horned, narrow, and doesn't have a lot of mass, you know, the ear is going to be much fatter, right? So aside from putting body aside, you know, you can look at the ears and get an idea for, okay, when he's looking at you, like, what's his ear look like in comparison to his tines? Generally speaking, if beams don't exceed the ears at alert position facing you, and there's not like something crazy, you know, that it goes way out past his nose and curves up, you know, to the sky for a few inches or something like that, that deer is going to have 21 to 23 inch beams.
Right.
That's just what it is. It's going to take a deer that wraps out well past his ears around and then back up to start approaching that 26, 27 inch range in the main beam category. If a deer's inside at or slightly, not like right at around ear length or in, you can guess pretty well 100% his, I mean, maybe there's some outliers, but for the most part, that's a 21 to 23 inch main beam. And I'm just throwing out like a median wild number that's going to be pretty consistent for you to like take home to the bank. And then I always use the ears to kind of guess like tines. I sit there and look, okay, A, does he have good forks? Does he have weak backs? How's the symmetry? And those all play an important factor. Mass hides inches. And I think that every single one of us that are really serious about it and have seen a lot of deer, we know that mass hides inches, that a heavy deer can hide 10 inches of mass, 8 inches at least, pretty easy. And then, you know, really quickly, score can be made up in eye guards. You have, you know, 4-inch eye guards, which some of the deer and some of the gene pools that I hunt, they have 4.5-inch eye guards. I mean, that's 9 inches. And then you add on, you know, 6 to 8 inches of mass on top of that. Whoa, that deer literally just, you know, gave you 16, 17 inches, like snap of a finger. So 160-inch frame all of a sudden almost touches 180, right?
Right.
And so I think that the devil's in the details when it comes to really trying to judge a rack. It comes down to time in the field, spending a lot of time with the animals, knowing what region you're hunting, so that way you can tell, get a good idea for body size as compared to length of ears, and knowing, you know, a mountain situation versus a desert situation versus a transitional country, like a 4,000 to 7,000 foot, 4,000 to 8,000 foot elevation in mountain mule deer, much different. In the desert, like Arizona, for example, you can be hunting in the PJs, the Kaibab.
Four different subspecies here.
Yeah, and then the desert, and those are two different deer. Those are completely different, and the way that you're going to look at them are going to be completely different, how you approach the score. But a good way to kind of like get your feet wet, I think, is right at ears to inside. Your main beams are going to generally be 21 to 23 inches. Mass, take a look at the base of the ears. If the base of the ears matches up really well to what the mass is coming out of the pedicle, you're going to have decent mass, especially if it carries. You can assume that that deer is going to have anywhere between 34 to 36 inches. If it's significantly less than that, you know, you're looking at probably 32 inches to 34 inches of mass. Very rarely have I ever arrowed an animal in any capacity that 3.5 years old or greater that has a good solid rack on them that has less than 32 inches of mass. Almost every deer has like 32 to 33 inches of mass, given it's, you know, has at least 3.5 years and it has like that 160-ish type frame with 23-inch bones. So I think that you're pretty safe to throw 32 to 34 inches on the mass category, so long as he kind of carries it. And then eye guards, you know, don't really try and put a solid guess on the number. And you can also use go back to the ears.
Ears.
Like, you know, if it's got 2 inches across on the ear, and then you can compare it to the eye guards and see kind of what he's got there, which can be tough to see if he's really far, but it'll, again, you know, give you that extra point. So if it's important to you, you'll take all those little different characteristics and you'll have a very good idea of like score before you go in on something. And that's the inside spread side of things with main beams. You know, sometimes you're hunting, I would say most oftentimes, not like 80% of the time, main beams are going to exceed inside spread for the most part. The very rare exception do you have, you know, like I said, a mature deer is going to exceed inside spread. But I mean, if you're a net guy and I'm not a net guy, you know, that takes away. I give gross on everything. I don't care. I've only had a couple in a book, so it doesn't matter to me ever. But I'm not diminishing that. If you're looking for a book animal, I mean, you just want to take that in consideration that, you know, obviously you're going to lose some inches on your main beams. If you're really most bucks that are inside their ears are going to have a 17 to 18 inch inside spread, and that's going to diminish your main beams by quite a bit, 10 inches, right? Overall gross score. So I'm the kind of person that, you know, gives a deer what they grew. I don't really necessarily care about, you know, net, gross, the dog doesn't matter to me. I just want to know kind of what he grows. It gives me a good idea of what he is characteristic-wise and kind of what kind of caliber deer I'm looking at. So I always care about gross, and I'll give them credit for everything that they have.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I never understood the whole net thing.
But one of the things that a lot of these guys are going to notice that we'll all be able to say, oh, yeah, for sure, like desert bucks, like true desert bucks, are almost always weak on the G2s. They'll have great G4s, great G3s, but the G2s, for whatever reason in the desert, just they don't have big G2s. So, like, if you're looking for a big scoring deer in the desert, symmetry is super important, and then fronts, like big fronts are going to give you probably 65% of your score. So if you have, you know, 23 inch beams, 2.5 inch eye guards, average mass at like 34 inches, you got like 12 to 14 inch G2s and 8-9 inch fours, and you know, you got 10-11-12 inch G4s. The 8-9 inch G3s, you know, that's going to be like, that buck in there is going to be in your 170s category, you know, somewhere. And that's generally what I kind of look for. If something exceeds that, if I'm looking at a deer that has 16 to 18 inch twos, he's got 10 inch fours or 10 inch threes, and you know, 10 to 12 inch, 13 inch fours, and he goes past his ears, I'm like, okay, we're instantly in the 180 category,
right?
Especially the mass and the eye guards carry, and then, you know, it kind of just goes from there, right? That's kind of at least how I break things down when I'm looking at them.
That's, I mean, solid. It's a good way to do it. If you don't need to be exact to the inch, but you're looking for that, like you said, that class. I want a 160 class, I want a 170 class, 180 class, 190 class. That's going to get you there. And that's,
yeah.
And sometimes you get really surprised, you know, you get over there and you look at them and put a tape to them and you're like, oh, I thought it was 180 bench book and he's a 190, you know. But and then sometimes you get a little ground shrinkage, but for the most part you're going to be very close. And yeah, it's kind of the way I do it. I've gotten to the point that unless I have to, like unless a client, for my own personal hunting, I don't do it. I don't sit there and look at his ear and say, okay, he's out there. I look at him and we talked about this earlier, but I could see, I guess we've seen enough deer, you know. I look at him right away and I go, oh, that's a 160, 170 inch buck, you know, and I'm going to go after. Like, that's kind of like, you've seen enough deer, but I've been fooled. I've been fooled plenty of times doing that. But I think that's generally a good solid way.
If you're talking yourself to inches, you knew.
Right.
Don't find yourself trying to, you know, recalculate a deer. Like in your head, you're trying to reassess. And that's when I just throw it out the window. Because oftentimes, like when I go after a deer that I know is a little bit smaller, I knew he was smaller to begin with. I'm just trying to find an excuse for in my head to, you know, go after him maybe. But that has to do with the hunting conditions more than anything else. Mm-hmm. If in your head you spend 2-3 weeks in the field and you're busting your hump, like going over ridges, and really you're just not seeing the caliber that you want, but then you come across the buck that's like, oh wow, he's instantly, you'll stare and say, you're not excited, but you're like, okay, that's like the best I've seen in like 12 days, like it's time, yeah, to go.
It's
and
go time.
You put him on, and you put him on the ground and he's 158. It's kind of like, I knew, yeah, he wasn't what I was initially looking for, but I've been busting my butt really hard and he's, you know, what I found. And that, we know intuitively, we have an idea that like, ah yeah, he's a little weak there, he's kind of not what I was looking for there. But really at the end of the day, we knew. I mean, the only way to really continue to push on is just not tag out and, right, or keep. And that's where I kind of don't draw the line yet, in that
I hope I never do.
I still love the adrenaline. I still love the emotion of the stalk and kind of like, you know, the feeling of being successful in the field, and all those things are amazing as a part of being a hunter.
Yeah, still very, for sure. My son's crying over there. I don't think you can hear him. Well, that's actually, I think we've given them everything they need to know and the tools that they need to know to be, you know, somewhat accurate. It takes a lot of practice. I mean, it's something that, I don't know if you do this, but I know I did this a lot, you know, years ago, is I would take photos of known, you know, scored bucks, and I would just look at them and I would just examine them. And that's, you know, it's like multiplication. You know, when we grew up, when somebody tells you, what's 5 times 5, you knew 25 because you memorized it, you know. It wasn't like you're like, oh, 5, 5, 5, whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. Like, you see enough of those pictures and, you know, that are that score, it relates to you. You can associate it. I think. So that's something I've always done, you know, or not always done. I used to do a lot, and it's kind of, you know, stuck with me. But anyway.
That's
all right,
good
man. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us, and it's always good catching up with you. We'll try to figure something out. We'll figure out some hunts for us this year. You got anything cooking that you want to point the listeners to, other than your photos and stuff?
You know, we're just putting together some really in the field, doing some hunting stories that I've been publishing and putting out there, working in conjunction with a few of our partners. There's some really exciting things coming up this fall and into next year, so we'll be pushing a lot more content out your way, and I think it'll be exciting for, you know, people to see. It's coming from a very, you know, an older man that, like, I don't really have any ego anymore, right? I don't care about any of that. It's more about just sharing the spirit and the love of the outdoors and trying to tell a story and being involved with something that I love so much and want to share that journey with others. So lots of cool stuff coming, you know, down the pike that way. And then final words, I would just say, like, shoot what makes you guys happy. Don't ever shoot for score, because I think if we shoot with score in mind, it hinders that journey, I believe. I really believe that it ruins friendships. It ruins things that are good about hunting. It, you know, we all want to go up on the mountain and feel like, to some degree, like, conquered that peak, or, you know, I got that big buck. But I think more important than, like I told you this a long time ago, it'll never be about that with you and I. Like, my friendship's going to come first with you versus before anything else. I don't really care about, you know, how good you are or how big of a badass you are. It doesn't really matter. And I don't care how good I am. It's more about, we share a brotherhood. We share a great friendship and a true, profound love for the outdoors. And the ego's just gone. Like, I don't care what you can kill with bow. Like, it just doesn't matter. I don't care what you can kill with your rifle. I don't care how much of a badass you are. I don't care that you survived 6 weeks straight and ate, you know, the brains out of a freaking doesn't matter to me. It's like just a profound love and appreciation for brotherhood, humanity, and, you know, I got so much wisdom here now, right? All the stuff that used to be important to me is kind of like not as important anymore. I care about the truth. I care about people being honest and truthful. That to me is a friend. Truthful, honest people, those are friends. People that kind of like we put each other first, right? In the situation and nurture those relationships. That's to me the important part about it. So when you go out on the field, I guess, don't put such a huge emphasis on skill score. Just kill the biggest thing you can. And if you see it through the scope and it makes you freaking giddy, go for it and enjoy yourself and enjoy your time. And as always, I really appreciate when you have me on, John.
Likewise, man. Always a pleasure. Actually, I think you are the guest that I've had on more times than anybody. You're the biggest repeat customer, I think.
Oh, geez.
If not, you're pretty damn close. I think you've been on five times? I think you've been on like 5 times. Oh. I might be mistaken.
I did put one of our episodes on my website. TheGreatLighthouse.com one, yeah. There's an episode on it. Anyway, all right, brother. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And we'll talk soon. Hope you have a good rest of your season. And thanks for coming on.
You bet. Happy hunting, everyone.